How many sounds do you hear in a day? Unless a sound is particularly annoying or loud or beautiful, you probably don't focus on it too much. But, for a minute, think about it. How do the daily sounds that you encounter affect your body? How do they affect your emotional state? And where are those sounds coming from, historically speaking? The person you're about to hear is Stacey Amardeep Bliss, PhD. She studies yoga, meditation, and gongs, and how these things are social practices. She's also a gong player.
There's certain phenomena that happens in a sound bath that is inexplicable. There's growth. There's possibility in dissonance. The body shakes stuff up that's stagnant, or there may be pain in the body, or pain in the psyche that's coming up, and we can't logically explain it. So for fidgety skeptics, I often talk about the parasympathetic nervous system and how out there in the world, we're on all the time with sympathetic fight or flight. So this experience of coming to a room, lying down for maybe 30 minutes or an hour for a bath of sound, an immersion in sound, allows them some time off from the fight and flight.
Hi, I'm Joanna Grace. I'm a music teacher. I'm a piano and horn teacher specifically. I run a classical, mostly classical concert series, and I'm a sound healer. So I've worked in group sessions with people that have Alzheimer's and dementia. I had feedback from one woman in particular that she didn't feel any pain during the session. So the session itself, whether it be a distraction or a temporary healing or whatever anyone wants to classify it as, was a way for her to have relief. I mean, she wasn't experiencing any pain during the session. Was the pain not there? I'm not a medical expert. Perhaps it was there, she just wasn't aware of it. And if we're not aware of our pain, is it still there? I mean, it's really an interesting thing to think about. Is our pain because we're aware of it? Or can we have pain and not be aware of it? Is it still a problem? That's a really interesting thing. I don't claim to have the answers.
Hello?
This is Dr. David Alter. He's a cardiologist. He also does research into the relationship between music, exercise, and health. According to Dr. Alter, simply listening to music or sound doesn't necessarily heal us. It is indirect. Music is more of a factor that motivates us to exercise, which then improves our health.
I think what music does is amplify our own emotions. It amplifies our perceptions of our own health. And that's important. I'm not belittling the importance of what music can do if it can direct us to the right types of behaviors.
If you have never thought about the connection between music and emotion, consider the way certain sounds make you feel. Joanna Grace has two examples.
And I have a seed rattle here. And to me, this is really a releasing instrument. It's really not about infusing the body with uplifting energy. It's really about releasing. So I just invite the listeners now, if there's something you would like to release safely, quickly, in less than a minute, this could be a helpful sound. Have this little heart-shaped container, and inside are these little chimes. for this, the sound is a little bit of a sweetness, like of a childhood innocence, of a little bit of just knowing that everything's going to be okay. This is what I think this sound means to me.
It is important to clarify that sound baths, like with crystal bowls, chimes, and gongs, don't have proven scientific health benefits. If you have a medical condition and want to get music therapy that has been proven to help people heal, you need to go to a trained neurologic music therapist.
Yep, this is Dorothy speaking.
This is Dorothy Davies. She is a neurologic music therapist based in the Toronto area.
Neurologic music therapy is a specialized area of music therapy that requires additional training. It's research and evidence-based, built on how music perception and music production influences the brain.
Neurologic music therapy is different from just music therapy. NMTs use standardized assessments and advanced knowledge of the brain to develop therapies for clients.
So for example, patients with stroke who after a stroke are unable to talk, but then when you pair words with melody in order to access the undamaged regions of their brain, you're able to retrain their speech language abilities. Or if we think about older adults, a different client population and age group who have memory deficits because of Alzheimer's or dementia or even just due to age-related declines, if you present familiar and meaningful songs to them, all of a sudden they're able to recall lyrics and various details of their life.
Again, to emphasize, it is important to find a trained neurologic music therapist in these cases.
Music can actually harm a client if it's not used properly. For example, it can overstimulate a client or it can bring up trauma. And then if that's not dealt with properly, it can really harm a client. So just being careful with the types of services that people do come across, that they're really looking for someone who's trained in a therapeutic way instead of just maybe somebody who teaches music or uses it recreationally.
So music and sound are something to be careful with. They can be harmful if they aren't used in the right way. If you do decide to explore the world of sound baths, music therapies, or sound healing, be aware of who is sharing the sound with you. There are historic and cultural roots to sounds that need to be respected. This is Stacey Amardeep Bliss with a final caution.
So the gongs are 2,500 years old, and the question of appropriation is so important. The current sound healers are learning a contemporary form or usage of a gong that is further away removed from the Javanese and the Balinese and the Chinese traditions. They used to play a gong to call people for war or call people for dinner. It's a call to bring people or a call for danger. Now, the contemporary usage is switching that to be a healing instrument. And somewhere in the last 100 years, it's been used in operas and symphonies. So there's been a usage musically as well. So the appropriation discussion hasn't happened yet because I think it's quite difficult. Who do we ask permission from? Who owns gong? So the gong player or the bowl player, if they can't answer questions about this instrument's history, they have some learning to do. And that is the due diligence of the player so that it's not just taken or appropriated and used in a way without having a link to the history and the lineage.